Hey all, welcome back to the Real Life Pharmacology Podcast. I'm your host, Pharmacist Eric Christensen. Thank you so much for listening today. As always, go check out reallifepharmacology.com. Go subscribe there. Get your free PDF on the top 200 drugs. Great resource, absolutely no cost to you. Just simply an email and we'll get you updates when we have new podcasts and other content available. So again, reallifepharmacology.com. You can get that free 31-page PDF, lots of content in there. So go check that out. And with that, let's get into the drug of the day today. We're going to talk about pantoprazole. Brand name of this medication is Protonix. And in clinical practice, I definitely see this medication used fairly frequently. It is a PPI, that is a proton pump inhibitor. And this drug inhibits the hydrogen-potassium ATP pump in parietal cells in the stomach. Ultimately, that leads to less acid in the stomach and a rise in pH in the stomach. As you can expect, when we reduce acid in the stomach, we're having an antacid type effect, so that's kind of a general broad classification in addition to the PPI classification. But as you could expect, this medication is going to be used for heartburn and various conditions like that. So GERD, peptic ulcer disease, Barrett's esophagus, it's used for GI protection in elderly patients. I see that as a common indication. So patients who maybe need chronic NSAIDs, for example, they may be put on a drug like pantoprazole to potentially protect the GI tract and reduce the risk of GI ulceration. Stress ulcer prophylaxis in the hospital. So this drug comes IV and NPO. Zollinger-Ellison syndrome, so lots of different kind of GI purposes that I've certainly seen pantoprazole and the PPIs in general used for as a class there. Adverse effect profile. In the short term, I typically in clinical practice don't see a lot of issues with the PPIs in general, or a pretty low incidence of common adverse effects. Any type of GI changes, constipation, diarrhea, headaches been reported, but again, not to a large percentage or a large extent of patients, but just kind of something to think about in the short term there. I would say more often than not, clinicians are more worried about the potential for longer term risks, which again, generally aren't crazy high. But maybe a little bit more significant issues that we may run into there. So first one I want to mention that's been reported in the literature is an increased risk of fracture. So again, higher dosages, the longer the patient's on it, potentially the more risk that patient's going to be. And obviously, when you're looking at patients, you want to review and look for osteoporosis risk factors. You know, are they a elderly female? Are they on, you know, long-term prednisone for some reason or a corticosteroid? You want to look at those osteoporosis risk factors in addition to the potential additive risk that a long-term PPI may cause as it's added and used. So that's really one of the big reasons, at least in my mind, along with a few others, why we try to minimize the use of PPIs, and we try to limit it to durations where possible. But there are definitely certain conditions like Barrett's esophagus where we're going to likely use PPIs long term. So again, always kind of this risk versus benefit type of calculation that should be assessed, monitored as the patient is taking that therapy. And as a general rule of thumb, somebody on long-term PPI use, you know, if you're seeing that patient periodically, Every 6 months to a year might be a good idea to kind of reassess. I've seen a lot of patients in my clinical practice where maybe they were put on an NSAID and then they were having GI issues, and so they wanted to continue the NSAID, and maybe we added a PPI. Well, maybe 5 months, 10 months, year down the road, maybe that pain that they were using the NSAID for has resolved and we can back off, potentially discontinue the NSAID. Well, think about it from a prescribing cascade standpoint. We added that PPI likely because of the NSAID. So maybe we can get rid of the pantoprazole that we're trying to use. So got to think about those long-term things, got to think about why the drug was added initially, and continually reassess these medications, particularly to reduce some of those longer-term risks, like the fracture risk. Other risks that certainly have been associated with the use of pantoprazole and PPIs, increased risk of C. diff, so that's a diarrhea-causing infection. Other things to think about, low magnesium. So if you see a patient on magnesium supplements and you see that they're on a PPI, you can, you know, potentially think about the fact that the PPI might be causing magnesium deficiency. Same thing with B12. PPIs and pantoprazole definitely been associated with B12 deficiency. So that's definitely something to think about if a patient presents with anemia and B12 deficiency. Make sure that pantoprazole isn't causing that issue, and if we can potentially get them off that pantoprazole, that could be advantageous. Again, always got to weigh the risks versus the benefits of being on the therapy or off the therapy. There has been some other rare things associated potentially with PPIs, hypersensitivity reaction, almost a lupus type reaction, interstitial nephritis. Again, those things are very, very rare, but because so many people are sometimes on these medications, those rare things might creep up into practice a little bit. All right, let's take a quick break from our sponsor, and I'll wrap up with drug interactions. If you're in the market for pharmacist board certification study material, like ambulatory care, BCMTMS, BCPS, geriatric certification, if you're a pharmacy student looking for NAPLEX content, go check out all the resources, meded101.com/store. In addition, we've got books for other healthcare professionals that may be beneficial on case studies, drug interactions. So if you're a nurse, med student, PA, nurse practitioner, definitely lots of different resources there in paperback books, in ebooks, as well as Audible books as well. And I've still got that deal with Audible where you can get your first Audible book for free if you've never tried it. So I've got a few Audible books available. You can get 6, 8, 10 hours of content, depending upon the book you're looking at, absolutely for free. And there's a lot of case studies and clinical pearls that I share that I've seen in my practice. So again, everything, meded101.com/store. All right, so let's finish up with drug interactions. First one that comes up, or I would say the one I get asked about most commonly, is clopidogrel. And pantoprazole, potentially more so than other PPIs, may have less impact on reducing the effectiveness of clopidogrel compared to, let's say, omeprazole, which is probably the other most commonly used PPI. So it's one of those things that's kind of a clinical gray area still. We've had some evidence saying yes, it does reduce the effectiveness of clopidogrel, and others saying no, it doesn't. And obviously, clopidogrel being used for something like heart attack or stroke prevention definitely is a significant drug there. So again, my focus when I see a PPI used with clopidogrel is saying, hey, can we get rid of that PPI potentially? So looking at the use, the indication, is it possible to get rid of that PPI? If it's not, and maybe they're on omeprazole, It might be a situation where I'm thinking about whether Protonix might be an acceptable alternative. That maybe, again, evidence isn't 100% solid, but maybe pantoprazole interacts a little bit less than omeprazole. So that's kind of my thought process with that drug interaction. Again, first and foremost on the top of my mind is, hey, can we reduce or get rid of the PPI? Is that possible? And if that isn't possible, then we look at some of those other risk mitigation strategies. PPIs in general, as they impact acid secretion and raise the pH, that can potentially impair iron absorption. Whether or not it's clinically significant, you're probably just going to monitor iron stores over time. If you know a patient needs iron supplementation and they've been deficient, that's probably the best strategy there, or the most common strategy. Also, bisphosphonates can potentially be impacted a little bit. So your drugs like alendronate, for example, their action can potentially be reduced potentially with PPIs, particularly if they're given together or close together, maybe even more prominent there. Some of the cephalosporins, ceferoxime, is a bad one that can be impacted by a higher pH in the stomach or in the GI tract in general, and absorption may be altered significantly there. Cefpodoxime is another one. I don't see it used terribly often. I'd say I see ceferoxime used a little bit more in clinical practice, but there's another cephalosporin that could potentially be impacted from the absorption standpoint. Azole antifungals, there's a few interactions with that. Again, kind of absorption variation changes based upon the use of PPI like pantoprazole. Methotrexate concentrations can potentially be increased. And then a couple other things that I wanted to kind of circle back to a little bit is low magnesium and low B12. So starting with low magnesium, while technically not a true classic drug-drug interaction, we've got to think about those medications that can cumulatively add to a low magnesium situation. So a classic example would be a loop diuretic with a PPI. We could have some cumulative additive effects on lowering that magnesium level. And B12, same thing. If a patient has type 2 diabetes, they're likely on metformin, or it's very commonly used. Metformin can lower B12 levels, and PPIs like pantoprazole can lower them as well. So kind of thinking about some of the cumulative effects that using drugs that cause similar effects can have on a patient, I think is really, really important to recognize and obviously address and monitor as indicated there. All right, so that's going to wrap up the podcast for today. Thank you so much for listening. I hope you enjoyed it. Leave a rating, review on iTunes or wherever you're listening. Very, very appreciative to those of you who have done that. Share us with classmates, colleagues, anybody who could benefit from pharmacology education. Help us continue to grow the podcast. And of course, your direct support at the sponsor, meded101.com/store. STORE helps fund this podcast, helps keep it available free and for all to benefit from. So again, thank you all so much for the support. I can't thank you guys enough, and I'm going to sign off for today.